perhaps, not really. Is that the wrong term?
Not the usual word used.
Not the usual word. Well, I feel like it. I think one of the reviewers of your paper told me, who am I to judge and read his paper? So anyway, you will present us something about the design of C-Sound 5, which we've already heard of before from Victor's talk. And I guess you will maybe go into more depth on this one.
Yeah. All right. First thing, I want to start making it quite clear that when I talk about this, this is a personal view of the design. And if we were to get any of the other people involved in this together, they'd probably give you a completely different story with a completely different bias. So that's the protection. So if you meet any of the other guys and complain, that's the protection. I'm going to start off by giving a sort of background, because I'm a great believer in history, and the only way we can tell how we got ourselves into this mess is to realize the mess we were in before we got ourselves into it. So I'm going to talk about how we got ourselves into this mess. C-Sound's been around these days really quite a long time. The best date I can find is 1985. Barry was working on things similar before then. It's a member of the C-Sound 5 family. It has a very wide range of sound synthesis techniques, analysis techniques, and various other things. As it sort of started off, it came out of MIT, and Barry's distributed it on the net. And I feel like I have to explain how I got involved in this. I used to be a mathematician. And at some stage, I got interested in music again, and I started playing around, looking at the net to see if anything might be helpful for what I wanted to do, which I didn't know what it was, of course. And about 1990, and I can't remember exactly when it was, I found this C-Sound thing, and it was a piece of software. So I downloaded it and looked at it and thought, that's a piece of software. And I compiled it, and it ran, and I thought, now what do I do? So I put it away, didn't do anything with it. Some weekend, I can't remember exactly when it was, on one of the mailing lists, somebody said, does C-Sound run on a PC, on DOS? And I thought to myself, it's in C. DOS runs C. And I actually worked for a company which was selling software written in C on DOS at the time, so it had to be easy, didn't it? So I sat down and made it work. And it was a wet weekend, nothing else to do. And that was the end of it, until about a week or so later, somebody asked the question again. And I said, oh, yeah, I did that. And then I suddenly found myself my mailbox full of messages saying, where is it? Where do I get it? How is it? And I sort of changed being a person doing research in computer algebra and relativity and various bits of parallelism and stuff, to suddenly finding myself maintaining this piece of program I didn't understand. It turned out afterwards that Barry was extremely pleased because he was getting fed up with all these people asking questions. And he was very pleased when he found that I was taking over answering all the questions. I didn't know what I was letting myself in for. I really didn't. I don't know how large the user community is, but judging by the sort of rule that only a certain proportion of people ever complain, and the number of complaints I get is large and growing, there must be an awful lot of them out there, and I'm not really sure how many there are. The support has always been a small group of people who do it originally as a spare time activity or a sort of random time. A small group is typically probably five or so active people at any one time, with a few coming in and out at various stages. So that was the sort of background of the thing. Now the problems. Well, all software has bugs, and that's not the real issue. I mean, bugs are just things you fix, he said. The real problem are these sorts of problems. The legal problem. Now, I really hated this, but it unfortunately is true. The original software was licensed under the MIT license, which says educational research purposes only. Anything else, you have to ask them. Now, when that was written, that was thought to be a very open and free sort of a license, and nobody really thought about it very much. The problems arise Well, first, what's education, what's research? It was clarified at some stage that writing a piece of music counts as research. And you don't have to worry, tell them, if you write a piece of music and then play it, you don't have to tell them, but that's that was okay. Creating music's okay. Downloading is a monopoly. And the only people allowed to download are people who had explicit permission. And in de facto, there were two of us, Richard Boulanger and myself. Now, I did this the bad way by not thinking about it very hard, and I was told I could do it. Later on, other people started to want to do this, and lawyers started getting involved. What made it really, really nasty was that MIT, who are a very interesting organization when it comes to selling things, had found somebody who wanted to buy it. And so suddenly this thing, which we were all just using, started being commercial. The real problem is, as soon as you have this control, other people wanted to do other things, and it really got in the way. And increasingly over time, the CSound software, which I still think is really quite an amazing collection of bits and pieces, was getting isolated from everybody else. The other thing was a change in what people wanted. CSound was originally an off-time synthesized-to-disc system. That's what you expected to do. Richard Boulanger says that it used to take 14 hours to generate his piece of music, his sort of standard test piece. It's an overnight business. Machines got faster, as we all know, and they're still doing it. And people started saying, why can't I play it in real time? And a lot of things in there really didn't quite work for real time. And the other was a beginning for people saying, well, yes, it runs programs, but can't I use it in other contexts? Can't I use it as part of this program? Can't I use it as part of that program? I actually found myself wanting to do this, but because I had the slightly privileged position, I could hack into it much more easily. But even so, there were things I couldn't do. And so this was beginning to be a real problem. This led to the big freeze. To understand the big freeze, CSound was written in KNRC, and over time it was sort of converted to ANSI C. The coding style is what I would loosely describe as 1970s. Now, this is, for most people, a real problem, but for me it wasn't. Strangely enough, Barry's coding style is remarkably similar to my coding style. And I understand his code when everybody else seemed not to. But it's a real problem with development. It's ad hoc parsing process. It has very few comments. Now, this is lovely because when I was a research student, my research supervisor told me you must never, ever comment your code. Because if you do, people will read the comments and think they understand the code. Where if you don't comment, they'll read the code and then they will understand it. And to make this absolutely clear, this was not him just talking about it, he did it. We had a very large, those days, assembler algebra system, and it had two comments in it. One said, print, and the other said, start here. And if you think this is worrying, it had no labels either. All jumps were relative. That's another story, but I mean, essentially... the background was that, CSound's not that bad, but it was closer to that than what you might call modern programming styles. After a lot of effort by various people, including people in this room, MIT lawyers eventually realized that they were being... in some sense, it was just getting to the right lawyer to ask him the question, why? And the answer was, no reason. And the license was changed to LGPL, and I think all the authors finally got to agree. I think last time I was the only one who hadn't actually signed the bit of paper. But this is what it used to look like. Well, it's a sort of picture, so it's sort of more or less right. You had a thing which read the orchestra. This is the orchestra side, not the score side. It read the orchestra. It munged it in a manner which, it munged it, passed it to this music monitoring program, which would fire off, it would order the processors, the methods, effectively, for the opcodes, which would be the large bank of them. And that's really how it worked, a big monolithic program a large chunk of opcodes, which you could add to if you were willing to get your hands busy on the source. Music Monitor was a little bit of a black art, and the Orchestra Reader still has some horrible bits in it. Not so much bugs as just total misunderstandings. This led to the big freeze. And it occurred to me while Victor was talking this morning, the real reason why the big freeze happened was Richard Dobson was writing the spectral opcodes and introducing the new spectral data type. And by the time he'd finished writing it, we were two versions later on than when he started it, and it didn't compile. And I spent a happy time sitting there merging these sources back together. And we came to the conclusion that anybody trying to do any really big changes, we had to freeze. It took us a year to get the freeze to be agreed. And some people's idea of freezing is not the same as other people's freezing. It's usually, well, yes, we'll freeze it, but we'll just change this. In practice, there have been some changes, but mainly bug fixes. So we began the big freeze. This is the theory. No new opcodes, no language developments. It happened that we had finally managed to get the opcode dynamic loading plugin system working just before the freeze. That was a good excuse from my point, because I could say, well, if you want a new opcode, make it dynamically loadable. The fact you can't do it for everyone was a slight problem. We fixed bugs, and we still are fixing bugs. Last one was done a couple of weeks ago. We're going to have a separate code tree, separated from the rest of the stuff, so we wouldn't be confused by it. That's the thing of the plugin, so anybody can carry on working. Because of the change in license, we could move over to things like SourceForge, CVS, and all the other sort of might you call reasonable systems. And so we were into a world which is quite a change, actually, for the culture of the people doing it. Because suddenly, almost anybody could get in there and start changing things. And in case of one or two people, they did. This was the requirements, sort of vaguely mapped out. The first thing was to make the system embeddable. We wanted an API so you could both embed it in other programs, call it from other programs, call other programs from it, and essentially separate out the sort of monolithic structure. Now, I'm not going to say too much about the API, partly because I never really understood it. And it's largely the work of Michael Goggins anyway. It's been developing over time as we go, and we're getting somewhere. The other big decision was to use as many other people's libraries as possible. CSound had its own writing of WAV files, its own writing of AIFF files, reading of the same, its own MIDI code. Everything was done inside itself. The other thing which some of us wanted very much was make it re-enterable, multi-instantiable. At the moment, there are a lot of global values lying around, and if you try and run two versions at the same time in the same memory space, they would just fall over each other. And a big attempt to try and separate the user interface code from the engine. That's to say, the how you talk to it and what it does really ought not to be confused as they are in the older system. So that was the way we were going. Also on the list was a new parser that's maintainable. The old parser is absolutely wonderful. Those of you who have ever tried this, if you try writing numbers with spaces in the middle, or commas rather than commas, you get very strange error messages. And I spent ages trying to work out what to do about it. My conclusion is replace the parser, because it's incomprehensible. I should say that there was a parser written before in Yak by Nikolai Bernardini, which at the time we didn't deploy, partly for licensing problems. But this was the other big thing. Cross-platform, and all old pieces must run unchanged. Now, not everybody agrees with that, but there are some composers out there who insist that the bugs have to be maintained. And if their piece uses a particularly bad piece of coding, it must go that way. Cross-platform, we did actually change slightly. I decided that as my Atari would no longer boot, that I would no longer support the Atari. That's open for negotiation. Similarly, the Acorn ARM workstation code, the Archimedes has been abandoned, though the man who wrote it still works for me. And we did actually sort of, our conclusion was if it runs on Linux, Windows, and Macintosh, that's most people, and the rest we can probably deal with. But that's a large part of what we're trying to do. So we ended up with something which looks a bit like this. This is an attempt to capture the spirit of it. We have an orchestra reader, which is the idea it will be replaced by a reasonable parser. We have an engine, and we separate the engine, the thing which actually decides what to do, quite separately, and the music monitor is sort of extended to include the engine. There are a number of loadable libraries. That's stuff which I will talk about in a bit. But it does include things like opcodes and various other stuff. There's an input-output section, base opcodes, and things for handling I/O messages and that sort of stuff, which are sort of now quite clearly separated in the code, live in subdirectories and so on. Input-output through external libraries. And so the thing becomes much more, well, it almost looks like it might be catching up with only 20 years ago or so. That was the sort of idea of what we're going to do. And so far, that pitch was written when the submissions to this conference came out, and it's what we thought we were going to do. Turn out it's not quite like that. The implementation of it. The API work, I said, it's largely the work of Michael Collins. He's used it in VST plugins stuff. He's largely a Windows programmer, and he uses Python a great deal, and I don't understand a word of it. The libraries we were looking at, and this is the original plan, was we were going to use libsound file for audio files, port audio for the real-time I/O stuff, port MIDI for MIDI, FLTK for the graphics type thing, and possibly adding other things if and when we ever found what it was we needed. A large static and global hunt. This is still continuing, but the basic idea was to move all those sort of variables which were specific into a single struct, and this is the struct which Vector referred to as the environ in structure, and you don't want to know the arguments we had about the name of that structure. Probably had more time arguing what it should be called than what it should be in it. I won because I was the only person who could write to the CVS at the time, so it's my fault. But that essentially maintains the each instance's state, and so it's sort of separating out. And this new structure, which is now getting remarkably large, really does capture what it is to be a CSound instance. We started actually using AutoConf and all those sorts of things. And we ran into amazing problems. I don't quite understand how many problems we ran into or why. But we could not find a version which would run on the Red Hat systems I was using, which are a bit old, the newer Linux systems which other people were using, and OS X and Windows at the same time. And we were just going round and round in circles. So eventually somebody suggested using SCONS. It's actually been a very good decision. It's made life a lot easier for us, though it's had its problems like any type system, but it has made the building of it a much easier process. As I said, we are running on those. The OS 9 is not very robust, but it is probably there. We will be running on others. There are people looking at various other things like 3BSD and things of that nature. And there's still no parser. This has been a recurring theme of this implementation. But every time we do anything, the parser always gets left behind. Unplanned developments, what we really did. The initial idea of plugins was to allow people to produce their own libraries. Originally, the idea was that you might have patented ideas, if you believe in such things, or commercial. You might want to sell your opcodes to the community, and so the idea was you could do it. Again, because I was bored one weekend, I decided to see how many opcodes I can make into plugins, just to see that it worked. And the answer is really quite a lot of them. So now nearly all of them are available as plugins, and very little in the base code. And I intend to move them out when I get a chance. So most opcodes are now loadable. Whether that's a good thing or not, I have no idea. But it demonstrated that the process worked. The plugin table stuff was, again, somebody suddenly said, but we can't do table plugins. So I managed to find a way of doing it, put it in. The only plugin of that form is one which generates these tanh hyperbolic tangents, which is only there to show you can do it and probably ought to be removed. But don't fear, people got carried away. The idea of having a single thing like Port Audio to do the real-time audio is no longer with us. You can decide which plugin you want to plug in for your audio system. There's now a whole range of these things. And indeed, the MIDI, you can plug in different sorts of MIDI controllers. And as of Monday, the utilities, the various other things for analysis, are also now plugins and seem to have moved out of the source. For those who are like downloading the codes, it's in a new directory, and take care, because it took me some time to work out where they'd gone. Victor commented about how things changed under his feet. Yes, they change under my feet all the time. Every morning I go to the machine, download and see what's happened overnight. The experience of this, I was going to say this is meant to be a private gathering and the rest of the world won't know about this, but maybe that's no longer true. These are my thoughts about the experience of the whole thing. It's taken much longer than I expected, in fact, probably than any of us expected, and caused a great deal more aggravation. When you're actually changing code, it's fun. The aggravation is getting anybody else to agree that to let you to change the code, or what happens when both of you do it at the same time. I won't go into great many details, but you need a lot of aggravation. LibSoundFile has been absolutely outstanding decision. That's the one decision which I have absolutely no doubt was correct. It's actually allowed us to increase the functionality for no work. You know, a little bit of work to actually use it rather than the hacked in code, but it has been absolutely wonderful. On the other hand, Port Audio has been, I think, less than successful, I think it's the technical phrase. One of the problems is that when we started, version 19 was just starting, and we thought, well, they'll be finished well before us, so we'll use it. And, it works on Linux, and it does work, and it works on this laptop. It didn't work on my main machine at home, because my main machine at home is a 64-bit machine, and Port Audio and 64-bit don't quite see eye to eye. I think I have it fixed, but it's not yet official. It's caused us real problems on OS X, and the Windows seems, I think, we're confusing. It seems some people say it's okay, and other people isn't. And that's, in some sense, the reason why we've now got all these plugins, direct plugins for ALSO and various other things. Port MIDI seems to be okay. It doesn't do as much as I had hoped, anyway. But it does actually provide a reasonably safe and secure background. So that's been acceptable, I suppose. We've done a lot of code cleaning. The code internally is much cleaner. It still hasn't got comments, though, I'm pleased to say. But it's a lot cleaner and it's a lot more readable. We have lost some facilities, which personally I don't like. The localization I liked. The localization was actually because I got really fed up with all the error messages being in American, which is not a language I speak particularly. I can, but I prefer not to. And so I actually changed them all to English. We only ever had two languages really full, with English and American. And we had a partial French one and a partly Japanese one at some stage. The current state, now, like all current states, this is the current state when I wrote the slide. So I don't know what they've been doing since then. On Linux, it actually works well. it's reported by other people as fast and robust. And that's a quotation, and I hope they're right. Some people actually used in a live performance and actually commented about how good it was. Spelling mistake there. Personally, I now use it for my own work when I get a chance to actually do anything like that. It's sufficiently good that I find it much nicer and acceptable. There are still things which are a bit nasty. The whole control of plugins is still, to my mind, not very nice. You either get everything or nothing, and I don't quite like that, but that's another story. Windows, I would say it's pretty close to acceptable. The manual, which in the paper when I wrote this, the manual was a problem. The manual as a user manual has been taken into hand recently and is probably almost usable. And there's still no parser. Well, actually, there is a parser. It's on this machine in the other window and one level down in directories. And it, on a good day, it has actually parsed CSound into CSound. I mean, compiled it into CSound, but better CSound coming out at the other end. Since then, of course, everybody's come along and changed the language. It doesn't yet do user-defined opcodes, the main thing is it's not linked into the rest of the code. So you can either have a parser or you can have a running system, but at the moment you can't have both. The trouble is the parser is it's such, and the original parser, it's such awful code, it's such contorted code, that's the word, that it's going to take me 2 or 3 days to find out where to kick it. And every time I do that, somebody thinks of something else for me to do. So, aren't you meant to go down when I do that? Yes, you are. Thank you. There's probably a whole host of slides there which would tell you all the detail. The conclusion is that my belief is we could actually release it as a beta now, and some people are treating it like that, even without the parser, which is a shame. But it has been an exercise in evolution, not revolution. There have been people who want us to throw the whole thing away and start again. We're determined to keep as much of it as we can. We're very close to release. There are people already using it for real stuff. But what I really want to do is say that it's the community itself which has produced all the material. I think the exact wording in the paper is a bit more carefully worded, but basically they're very good at saying what they want and very good at saying it again when you don't give it to them. And one or two of them are good at providing it as well. They have been very, very supportive, in fact, in saying what we needed to do. And I particularly wanted to acknowledge the work of Michael Goggins on the API and the Windows development. Richard Boulanger has always been a great help. I mean, he never writes any code, but he doesn't get a lot of code written. And the other person I was going to mention particularly, because it's actually happened since the paper was written, is there's a Hungarian called István Varga, who anybody in the CSound community will know about him. He dropped out of our community, partly over a dispute about code freezes and various other things. And he came back about turn of the year. And in the last 3 months, he has put an awful lot of code in there and a lot of effort. And it's happened to coincide with a time when I couldn't type. So a lot of the stuff which is done recently, both the good and the bad, all these changes overnight, they're largely his fans' work. But he has taken us from we'll get there eventually to a system where I think we're pretty close to a runnable system. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's a sort of... various other things have come up, made me think about it. Somebody asked a question to Victor about debugging. I think I know how to incorporate a debugging system into this if I get my parser. Without the parser, it's a little bit harder. I think I know how to do it. There's lots of things floating around, and I have this feeling that I'm never going to get back to doing computer algebra. I don't think I've got time for this anymore. This is going to keep me going for quite a long time. Thank you.
So thanks, John. Questions? Okay.
I've got two short questions. This is Julian Klaas in Germany. I have two short questions. The first is, where's the new directory where CSUN 5 is located, the actual version?
You mean where do you get it from?
Yeah.
There are two places. One is it's on SourceForge under CSound, and you can get the stuff from there. As a package system, there are some snapshots actually on SourceForge for major platforms, but they may or may not be up to date. And Victor might remember where I put it. Somewhere on my website, there is a snapshot of Linux as of the last time I got round to doing it. So we're not really quite distributing it yet, but it will be there hopefully very soon, but largely through SourceForge.
Okay, and you mentioned the manual.
Yes.
I already had a short look in to the SourceForge net site, and I've only seen a PDF version of the manual. Is there an HTML version ready, or will it be done?
The new manual is in one of these XML things, and it generates different types. I actually use the HTML version, despite my dislike of the web. I actually have an HTML version on my desktop at home for looking up things in the manual. They say there are other formats available as well, but I don't know about it.
Okay, thanks.
Any more questions? There is one guy over here.
Actually, just a comment. csounds.com/manuals is how you get it. It's available in HTML, CHM, which is a Windows, is that right, Victor? A Windows manual documentation style? Boo, but I got to tell you, it looks pretty nice. and what's the other one? There's a PDF. So.
Okay, thanks for the addition. Any questions? Eric, anything from the audience on the internet? They are quite silent this time. No, again, this guy here.
I think John didn't mention, but there is also now part of Michael's contribution to the code base is a graphic interface.
Yes, sorry.
CSound VST. Okay.
Those people who know me, which is probably not that many people here, know that I dislike any forms of graphic interfaces, user interfaces, GUIs or icons. So I probably forgot all about it. But Michael has done a lot of work in producing one, and I saw some pictures the other day, and it looks okay if you're into that sort of thing. I once said that graphics was the biggest mistake computers ever made. It went down very well with the computer graphics group in our university, I can tell you.
Okay then, John, thank you very much for those who enjoyed this. There will be another talk by this wonderful guy on Saturday. Yes?
Can I help you? Oh, it's name tag. Thank you very much, John. Thanks. Nice talk.
And then we will have the next and the last talk for today at 4:45, which will be Pau Arumi on the CLAM framework.